And it's essentially a low pressure system containing very cold air. And it's strongest during the winter season.
And they're like tiny little multi-legged. They are unkillable.
So no sense in worrying about it until the springtime and then take that inventory.
Exactly. I found the most awesome hidden gem in Cal. Beer me some water.
No, if the mountains are blue, it's cold.
Oh,
if
right.
Father
Plop was like, hey, yo.
Welcome back to the Helpful Gardeners podcast. Well, if you've been living in North America for the past couple of weeks, you may have heard a little term called the polar vortex.
Yeah, we heard it, we lived it, we felt it, we cried about it.
Oh, I cried lots of tears.
Yeah.
I stayed inside.
I have a dog.
You know, one of the coolest things though about the polar vortex was seeing all the pets come into the greenhouse.
Yeah.
They're pet friendly.
Yeah.
And you know, when you can't go outside, where do you go? It's so nice to have pet friendly businesses.
It really is. Because honestly, when it's like that, Jimmy has to wear his boots.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get the amount of walks a dog his size needs. But that's life for everybody in conditions like that. You have to adapt.
Yes.
You know,
and thankfully it only happens like one or two times a year.
Yeah.
You know,
and it was short.
And it was short. Yeah.
Last year, I don't know if you remember, the reason I remember it very clearly. So I take a break over Christmas and I take off the same time that Harry's off school.
Yeah.
So I can spend that time with them. And last year, the day the kids started their Christmas break, we got a polar vortex. And the day they went back to school is when it broke. It was
perfect
3 weeks.
Thank you, Mother Nature.
Yeah, like, thank you. I really wanted a 15-year-old stuck in the house for 3 weeks. That was pleasant.
Yes, there are negatives, absolutely. Yep. But it's a very natural thing, I think. When I was looking into a polar vortex, because we hear it sounds very ominous, right?
Yep.
And we know that it means cold, but what's really happening? So I looked online to Britannica. I thought that was a pretty good source. And the polar vortex mainly resides over the two polar regions on Earth. And it's essentially a low pressure system containing very cold air. And it's strongest during the winter season. And sometimes the circulation of this vortex is disrupted by high pressure systems.
Okay.
And then that can produce cold waves that leak away from the poles. And so that's why it dips so far. Like, I think I was seeing our colleague Carol just came back from Texas. And she said that the snow even went as far as Texas.
Yeah, I've been seeing it all across North America, especially the western side.
Yes.
Was brutally, brutally cold. Like, and okay, they didn't have the extreme temperatures that we had, but it's all relative.
Yeah.
If you're in Texas and we're talking about Texas, but I just cannot swap to Fahrenheit because I don't know how that works.
Nope.
But if you're in Texas and it drops to -5, that's bad news.
Yes.
You know, in England, I thought I knew what cold was until I came to Canada.
Yeah.
I thought I knew what snowfall was until I came to Canada. And I'm not even talking about polar vortex. First snowstorm we ever had, we were told it was a flurry. I had never heard that expression before. So we're like, what's a flurry? And everybody's like, oh, it's just a light snowfall. It's a dusting. And we were like, okay. We woke up the next day and there was like 16 inches of snow on the ground. And we were like, we'd never seen that before in our lives. Deepest snow we'd ever seen. And we're like, what the hell is this? And all the Maritimers are like, it's a flurry. Like, we already told you that yesterday.
So they knew what was up, but you were just like completely different perspective.
Yep. Not prepared or anything. So yeah, we're Canadians. We're used to winter and hardy and blah, blah, blah. But when the temperature's bottoming out at -37, with not including the wind chill.
Yes. And that is exactly what temperatures reached in Alberta, at least where we're from.
-50, -51 with wind chill.
Yeah, with the wind chill. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our friends in Vancouver, they just got a huge amount of snow.
Yeah, they did.
They don't
really
get a lot of snow.
And Vancouver Island, too.
Vancouver Island got a bunch of snow, too. They're just not prepared for it, right?
Nope.
Like, for us, we kind of were like, oh, okay, we can pretty much prepare for this kind of thing. But over there, I mean, you have to chain up tires. There's a whole lot of stuff.
Yep.
And when we're talking about the polar vortex, we should also look at how it can implicate our gardens and our houseplants. And let's just start with the garden and maybe talk about some of our perennials, trees, and shrubs that we might be worried about.
I wouldn't worry too much about the perennials.
Okay.
They're pretty much going to be okay. There's no above ground growth. Maybe some of your perennials, like creeping thyme is a good example. If there is no snow coverage, and there really wasn't. I mean, we had rain and 9 degrees on New Year's Eve.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that until it froze. Yeah. You know what, though? For Christmas, it was funny. I bought everybody a pair of crampons, and so did Jenny.
What's a crampon?
It's the studs, the little spikes that they're like slip on and they go on the bottom of your shoe. My God. I know. It's a mixture of cramp and tampon.
I don't know what this is. Okay.
So I went to the park with Jimmy after that when it froze and everything was literally a skating rink. Yep. And I wasn't wearing my crampons and it was brutal. I couldn't even walk. The next day I put my crampons on. And I was walking normal. Other people were sliding. They couldn't walk their dogs properly. And Jimmy and I were walking around like no big deal.
Ooh, that's a good tip, actually. Yeah. Especially if you say have to go, like even if you're not going out to walk a pet, maybe you're going out to take the garbage to the side of the street.
Jenny leaves hers now on one pair of her winter boots.
Yeah.
They're on there permanently.
Yeah.
I've known about them for years. I was always like, it seems gimmicky. I can't believe I didn't get them when I first heard about them. I was dumb. I should have done it. But back to perennials. So if there's no snow coverage and that cold hits, absolutely it is not good. But if you put in a perennial at the end of last year, say you got one in September and put it in, you might want to pay a bit of extra attention to that one in the spring.
Okay.
It might have been hit hard because the roots won't have had a chance to go really deep.
Mm-hmm.
Your mature perennials, the ones that have been in your garden for 5, 7, 10 years, whatever, they should be fine. They're in this climactic zone for a reason. They're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. They might be a little more beat up. We all are after a polar vortex, but I wouldn't worry about that. It's really the dieback on trees and shrubs.
Yes. I mean, I was looking into this a little bit and learned about frost cracks.
Yep.
With the expansion of water and how especially younger trees and shrubs can be extra susceptible to this. And it could cause huge damage, and especially here in Alberta where we have heavy temperature fluctuations as well. I mean, even during the polar vortex, I mean, it would go minus 30 all the way down to like minus 15 in the span of a day.
Yep.
That must be tough for the trees and shrubs.
If you have a tree that might be susceptible or you just don't want to take the risk, you can protect against it.
Ooh, how?
Basically, what you want to do is use kind of a frost blanket.
Okay.
And put it up as a guard and reflect the warmth of the sunlight away from the tree.
Aha.
So try and keep the sun off it as much as you can. Again, not foolproof, because if the temperature goes to 9, the ambient air temperature is going to melt the snow.
Yeah.
But you can help mitigate it, mm-hmm. because the vast majority of that you're going to see on the south or the west side of your tree where it gets the most amount of sun exposure, so it gets the warmest.
Okay.
So, because isn't that cool when we're in a polar vortex on the days when there isn't wind? So I know we have people listening from all over the world, and that's awesome. And I know, coming from England, how ridiculous this sounds. Every Canadian will know what I mean when you go minus 30 with no wind isn't too bad.
No, it's really not. It's not. Yeah. Especially if the sunshine. Yep. Yeah.
The other day when the polar vortex broke, we had some snow and I went out and shoveled.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre how much we climatize. Speaking of plants and trees. I shoveled the front and the back, all of the walkways and the sidewalk, and I wasn't even wearing gloves.
Wow.
I was just wearing my spring jacket, and I came in, I was like, oh, it's nice outside. And I was like, oh, it's minus 9. But there was no wind.
No.
And after minus 37, minus 9 feels very nice.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, trees and shrubs, especially where we had that moisture, and especially for how warm it was all through December, mm-hmm. some of those buds might have had an uptake of water.
Yeah.
That polar vortex is going to freeze and it's going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So you may find in the spring significant dieback on certain shrubs. Ones like dogwoods and cotoneasters, I wouldn't be too worried about those. If it's an established plant, you're probably not going to lose the plant. You're just going to have to trim it a little harder.
So how long do you have to wait before you, like, you know how sometimes, depending on what kind of spring we have, you might have to wait longer to make sure that your tree or shrub is dead.
Yeah.
So what kinds of signs should you start looking for in the springtime to make sure that it is actually dead?
So if it starts budding out and it's budding out at the base, great. Keep an eye on it. If the buds at the base are starting to turn into leaves and the other buds are not, that's normally a good indication. So okay. They might be a bit slower, but they shouldn't be that far behind.
Okay.
Another good tip is prune back incrementally. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it happen numerous, numerous times where people go out and they go, oh, I'm going to prune, and they see a bud and they prune right back to the bud. And then you look at the part that they cut off and the wood inside is green and there's moisture in it. That's living wood. Mm-hmm. So what I always do is I start at the tip. Now, if I know it's dead, you can bend it and it might snap in your hand. Then you get where it's bending and you're like, oh, I don't think that's alive. Take an inch, 2 inches off and have a look at the wood. If it's brown inside and it's totally desiccated and dry, it's dead. Cut back another 2 inches. Cut back another 2 inches until you get that wet, moist, green wood. Once you see that, you know that that's living wood. Cut to a bud, prune it accordingly, and see if it buds out from there.
So there's really nothing that you can do right now. So no sense in worrying about it until the springtime, and then take that inventory.
Exactly. And what I would recommend, when the spring starts, the moment you see the bud break, or with your perennials, the moment you see those shoots coming up, get the fertilizer onto them. Mm-hmm. Start feeding them. Make sure the water is good, because we haven't had much snow this year.
No, not for Southern Alberta.
No. The snow coverage has been pretty. I mean, over Christmas, there were times where I was like, am I going to have to go out and cut my lawn? I know Brandy's not going to cut my lawn. But the grass was green.
No, it was like Mother Nature was just like holding out for right this moment.
Yeah.
They're
so
like, they're ready.
The excessively cold temperatures without snow coverage is what's going to hurt your plants.
Yeah.
So there's not much, again, there's not much we can do now. Be aware of it and just be ready to go in the spring. And that can be as much as, you know, if it's cold again, visit your local garden center and buy your fertilizer now.
And speaking of Golden Acre, we also get a lot of bird visitors in the greenhouse. And I know this polar vortex brought a lot of them inside the greenhouse. We saw a huge amount of birds take shelter. So let's talk about them a little bit. Maybe are there any tips that you can give people to sort of help out their neighborhood bird friends?
Food and water. That's what they need, because a lot of times people will feed the birds at this time of year. The problem is they need water and everything is frozen solid.
Yeah, that's true.
And not even any snow. There's nothing melting. So there's nothing for them. Minus 35, you put out water, it's frozen in half an hour. Doesn't matter how warm it is when you put it. I mean, everybody has seen the videos now where you throw boiling water and it turns to powder. And the great thing about that is if you encourage those birds into your garden with that, hey, guess what? They'll come back in the summer.
Yeah.
They'll come back. They will be like, hey, this is a sauce for me, but they desperately need water.
Yeah. So if you want to make some friends.
Yep. Yep,
put out. Win over the birds.
They're savvy animals. They have to be. They're wild animals. So I'm not saying you have to constantly put out water. We don't have time. But, you know, say somebody like me, I leave in the morning, I come back late afternoon. If I put out water in the morning, when the birds are waking up, it freezes half an hour later, whatever. And I put out another one when I get home and it's still daylight. The birds will adjust their timing accordingly. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, oh, that's when there's water available. I need to be there for that. So you're not having to be out constantly. If you've got the time and you want to do it, the birds will love you. But just if you have the wherewithal to do it, get water outside for the birds.
Do we have to do anything with our bugs? Do we have to be worried about disease with the polar vortex?
So bugs, unfortunately, that's why we always say leave a big pile in your garden.
Ah.
Yep. I left a big pile in my garden this year. It doesn't please me to look at it, but I know. And then when the polar vortex hit, it did please me.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, there's my little hotel.
Yep. hotel. I love it.
And then when it got covered in snow too, I was like, perfect. So it gets cold in Montreal. They can go down real low as well. But one of the reasons why they are a higher zone than us, they're a zone 5B, I believe. is because of the snow coverage. Mm-hmm. Because once you're under the snow, you can only be so cold. Once that the snow is a great insulator. So once that hits on the plant, sure, yeah, you stick your hand under snow, it is cold, but it can't get any colder. So the wind isn't going to hurt it. Nothing is going to happen. And then that inherent moisture feeds the plants mm-hmm. in the spring. So have your pile of leaves, have your pile of garden debris. Mine is a mixture of tomatoes, kohlrabi. I should say tomato plants, not just big red tomatoes sitting out there. Leaves and lawn clippings.
Yeah.
And it's just a huge pile, and I guarantee there's going to be a ton of bugs. The other good thing, though, is it kills bad bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So it does kill good bugs. It does kill bad bugs. But one thing, talking about snow coverage again, when it gets that cold, it can really, really devastate the nematodes and the bacteria and whatnot in your soil that you need.
So yep. Soil quality could go down.
Yep. Yeah, it can absolutely inhibit that. So in the spring, again, really make sure you're freshening up your soil. You want to put in compost, charcoal, worm castings are going to be amazing. Any kind of living organic material you can get into that soil is going to be really important to make a good breeding ground for all of the nematodes and the bacteria and all those microorganisms to start populating again. Mm. Nothing is living in that other than, what are they called? Those little I want to say Targaryen, but that's Game of Thrones.
Those what?
Tardigrades? There ain't...
I don't know what a tardigrade is.
Google tardigrade. It probably isn't the correct name. I can't remember it right now.
Tartar sauce. Tardigrade. Oh, animal?
Yep. And they're like tiny little multi-legged. They are unkillable. As long as they're not exposed to the actual liquid, if you put them in a test tube and dip them in liquid nitrogen, they will live. They can live in out of space.
That's really scary.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a tardigrade in our show notes over at goldenacre.ca/blog. So you can, I need to close this page. I'm going to have to put like a warning sign. Like
I think
trigger
they're
kind
of cute.
I don't like it. It looks like a mole rat. Like,
yeah. And it with like 8 or 10 legs or
like
something.
How big are they?
Oh, minuscule.
Yeah. There's a video. There you go. Okay, yep. There's going to be a whole section that yep. was unanticipated about the tardigrade.
But yeah, a lot of the nematodes. So a lot of nematodes are water based.
Mm.
It gets that cold, and water expands. It ruptures our cells and whatnot. So it does devastate the organic soil quality. So making sure you amend your soil, fertilizer are going to be essential.
Okay, so that's kind of the implications on the garden. But I also thought it was really important to dive inside as well,
yep.
because our houseplants are also going through some changes, starting with first getting them home. Here at Golden Acre and at many garden centers, if you take a houseplant home, they're going to wrap it for you. They're going to mm-hmm. get out the paper, the heavy duty paper. And the idea is to trap the heat inside yep. so that you can get it to your car and get it home as quickly as possible. I mean, if you think about where houseplants come from, it's more tropical destinations. And so it would be like I know we've said it in the past. It's like you coming home from Mexico and then not dressing for the weather.
Yep.
And it is cold and your body goes into shock and it's just bad news. So your plant could die. Will die in yeah. those oh, yeah. in those like minus 30 temperatures.
Years ago, I'll just touch on that yeah. really quick. I won't get into the story, but we had to move in a hurry and we had to move over. We had to move in the day in between, you know the story, but in between Christmas and New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was a polar vortex and it was not pleasant. I didn't have time to wrap my houseplants.
You didn't?
Nope. I did not. I did not have the time. So on top of everything else, I was also in a car accident. Somebody hit my car. Luckily, though, I was moving and the rental place didn't have a car, so they gave me a truck.
Seriously.
So I had the truck. I had the heat cranked. I backed it right in, literally parked it on the lawn, and I ran out of the front door into the truck. Okay, so I'm talking a gap of maybe 8 feet, maybe 8 feet. And I put the plant in, I closed the door. Next plant went in. Now, the next house I moved into had an attached garage. So I pulled the truck into there,
oh, okay.
closed the door, and moved them in. Okay, I lost 8 of my houseplants.
Even after all of that, you still lost 8 of them.
That 8-foot distance in minus 30, minus 35, whatever it was, 8 plants didn't make it. The most awesome hidden gem in Calgary.
Oh, where's that?
Have you ever been to Heritage Square?
It's like just off like McLeod?
Yeah, McLeod. I don't think it's on Heritage Drive. Maybe one block south, maybe.
Okay.
I didn't know this place existed. I had to use Google Maps, okay? So I go in and I look at the directory to figure out where I need to go. And I can hear running water, but I'm not really paying attention to it because I got to focus on what I'm doing. I figure out where it is. I look at the time. Okay, I got a few minutes. I can make it. And the map is like, go straight ahead, blah, blah, blah. Well, straight ahead is the atrium. And it's open plan. And the inside, it has waterfalls and running water, and they've got koi ponds, and then the rocks around the koi ponds have cushions on them so you can sit there and have your lunch or have a coffee. Of course, I didn't take a photograph because I'm not smart enough.
Oh, no, I'm
enough.
On Google.
Okay, good.
I'm already there.
Absolutely stunning. And
it is stunning.
Yeah, there's walkways over the little rivers.
Wow.
And whatnot. And I was like, if you've got the winter blues and you can't get outside, go there. Ton of natural light coming in because it's an open floor plan. Yeah. But they've got tropical plants all throughout it.
Yeah. And I see a birds of paradise, palm trees. That's incredible.
And I was like, you know, I get that it's a professional building. It's not a mall. So they're really not probably trying to attract people. I don't care. I'm going to shout them out. We all need greenery and, you know, plants have been proven. The sound of running water has been proven to help ease depression and SADs and whatnot. Again, not a cure-all. It's a tool in the box. And this place, it lifted my spirits.
Yeah.
And the koi in the ponds are obviously used to people because I walked down and they all swam towards me.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. I was like, hey, little guys.
Oh, we need more places like this, I think.
Kind of what the Devonian Gardens used to be. But down south.
Mm-hmm.
So people who like might not have a garden center and they live close to that area, go there, grab some lunch, grab a coffee. The sound of running water in the big palm trees, and it was warm and there was fishies swimming around. And I was like, it elevated my mood. I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I went and sat in traffic to get home for 50 minutes. But at least I had that before I sat in traffic.
I know what I'm looking up. More green spaces in Calgary that are indoors.
Yeah, that was that was cool. An absolute hidden gem. So big shout out to Heritage Square.
Love it. Let's actually talk about home care, because you said something when you were on Global this past weekend about the frost that you can get on your glass, on your windows.
Yep.
And how, especially if you're in an older home, that could mean bad news for your plants. So let's explore that a little bit more.
Yeah. I like older windows. And the reason I like older windows, newer windows now for heat retention and safety and blah, 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 number of other things are heavily protected and filtered, but they're filtering out the UV.
Mm.
That's why some people, I always ask when they're like, no, I don't understand how my plant doesn't have enough light. I have it in a window. And I go, oh, is it a new window? Like, did you put it in the last, 4 or 5 years? And they go, yep. And I go, that's why. You might think it's getting it, but it's not.
What?
The light coming through is heavily filtered.
I had no idea.
Yep. So your plant isn't getting it. Old windows that are essentially just glass, the UV is pouring through it.
Yeah.
So, but the downside of that is, and this is why they do it, is those old windows, they can often frost up.
Yeah.
And your plant is close to that. And that chill can be enough to hurt the plant. We have a couple of windows and they're old. Never bothered doing anything with them. And they actually develop like solid, like you can scrape it with your nail frost.
We had some.
Yep.
We had some.
And I had a couple of years ago, didn't think about it, literally didn't occur to me. And I left a succulent there. Now the succulent lived. But the half of the succulent that was facing the glass turned white.
Aha.
Because Jenny was like, oh my God, it's like a spirit succulent. And I was like, actually, no, it's massive cellular damage from front.
I knew you were going to come back and just burst her bubble.
But I didn't mean to. I was just like, oh, well, actually, it's not a spirit succulent. And Jenny's like, okay, it can be both. And I was like, okay, sure. Yeah. And the succulent lived. But the part that was very close to the window had gotten too cold And succulents are heavy water-based. That water had expanded and ruptured all the cells.
Yeah.
So,
okay. You know, so best thing to do is to move them away from the window just for like that 1 to 2 week period.
Yeah. Keep them away from the windows. And that's why I said get grow lights.
Yeah.
Get grow lights. They, they're not like those bulbs, like I've said before, they're $10. Mm-hmm. Your plant will not thrive under it, but it will keep it alive.
Yeah.
Actually, I was looking at my house the other day. And I haven't said anything to anybody at home yet, but I'm like, I need another plant light. That plant, it needs a bit more light. So I've already got my eye out. I know where it needs to be. I just have to figure out how, because I need it suspended from above.
Yeah.
But I don't want to buy a massive like $1,600 LED. So I'm trying to figure out what I can do to put a light there. I've already got a couple of ideas.
Are you the person that will just put it in and then wait to see how long it takes for them to notice?
Yep. And I daisy chain all my lights. So when you turn on one light switch, all of them come on.
Oh my goodness.
So it doesn't really look like that. It's not like, oh my God, I got to turn off 10 lights. You know, you just have to turn off one.
Yeah. What about drafty doors and heating vents?
Yeah.
You know, we're turning on more heat.
Yep.
And we're also like that door opens and it's just like whoosh.
Yeah. Do you ever do that where you it's cold, so you turn your heat up and then you go outside and you come in and you're like, oh my God, it's unbearably hot, and you turn your heat down, and then half an hour later you're like, oh my God, it's freezing.
I could not regulate myself.
Yeah. It's hard because you come in from outside and it wouldn't matter if your house was 16 degrees, it will feel hot.
Yeah.
But you know, you're keeping it at like 20 or 22 or something like that. So you come in, you're like, oh my God, it is too hot. So you turn it down and then you're like, now it is too cold. And you turn it.
We need more blankets and less blankets.
So that does have an effect on the plants. So yeah, keep your plants away from any doors, unless they're protected. I have a spider plant hanging right next to my back door. Like it couldn't be any closer to the back door if I tried. But a few years ago, I wanted it to be hanging because of where it was, and I didn't have any hanging baskets, but I had an old hurricane lantern.
Yeah.
So I put it in the hurricane lantern and I closed the door.
Oh, that's cool.
The glass insulates it and it is thriving.
That's neat.
The leaves are starting to poke out the top.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is right next to, like, that back door is open. That plant is getting hit with cold air, but it doesn't get through the glass.
Yeah.
So it is protected. But yeah, move them away from drafts. And then for the heat vent, the only thing you have to watch out for the heat vent is how much it's going to dry out your plant.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you've had the same watering schedule for forever.
Yeah.
And then you don't think to check on it.
Yep.
And then the heating vent could just dry out the soil altogether, and then there you go. So I know we have new moisture meters in store.
Yeah, they are awesome. They are the Susties.
The Susties.
Yeah, great name for it too. I don't know why I don't know why it's such a friendly name.
Yeah, and so you know how I always have had trouble with moisture meters? I love these because it's a visual representation. It's simple. You just stick it in. When the indicator turns blue, it's wet. When it turns white, it's dry.
Yep.
There you go.
So I tested them. So I always like to admit my foibles. Like I'm not perfect. And I found out that I was overwatering one of my houseplants.
Mm-hmm.
Not by much. It was still alive. It wasn't suffering. But it's a huge, it's that big 8-foot tree I've got.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's in a huge pot. So obviously I check the surface of the soil and it's dry. So I'm like, oh, okay, it needs to be watered. Well, I put a Susti in it just to figure it out. And I was like, I'm curious. No, that Susti is 8 inches long and that deep. It is still got moisture. And I was like, wow, I was overwatering. So I dialed it back and the plant is actually doing a little better.
Oh my gosh.
When it runs out, because eventually the dye does run out, I'm probably not going to replace it because now I've learned the schedule.
Mm-hmm. But then say you go through a polar vortex, having something like that to indicate like, hey, there's a heating vent and this is dried out a lot sooner than normal. That would also be very helpful too.
So, exactly.
I mean, I would be probably on the other side of it where I would always have one because I'm the kind of person, I don't know if I just have like undiagnosed ADHD, but I need to see something in front of me for me to remember to do
Fair
something.
Enough. Yep.
So having like all of my plants are on the main level. My Monstera is next to my desk. I don't have any other plants anywhere else in my life because if I don't see it, I don't remember to water it.
Yep.
So if I can actually see a moisture meter in front of my face that's telling me, hey, this plant is dry, then of course I'm just going to go and give it a drink.
And it's as simple as like blue or white.
Exactly.
It's not. And I love those. I've got one of those electronic moisture meters. I've used it before.
Yeah.
Reading the gradient, you're like, okay, so there is moisture, but is that enough moisture? I don't know what that's telling me really. Yeah. So unless you know how to read it, where this is like, if I'm blue, I'm good. If I'm white, I could use a drink.
It's like a beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, beer me some water.
No, if the mountains are blue, it's cold.
Oh, if it's right. I thought the plant was like, hey, yo, when I'm white, beer me.
And this week's hypothetical question of the week is, if you can choose any bug to become the size of a domesticated pet, which one would it be?
Not a spider.
Wait, a spider.
Spider isn't technically a bug, but are we including arachnids?
Oh, shoot. Ground rules.
Yeah. I think we should.
Yeah.
Sure. Generic bug.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine? Because I wouldn't pick spider, but I know somebody would pick spider. And you go to the dog park and there's a spider running around playing fetch. And it would be like, I can never, ever come to this park ever again. Is this just you and I and nobody else gets to pick it?
Sure.
Okay, good. Because I know you wouldn't pick spider either.
Oh, gosh, no. Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Right off the top of my head, because I absolutely love them and I think they'd be great to pet and I think they'd be funny, would be a bumblebee.
Yeah.
A fuzzy bee.
That was actually one of mine.
Yeah,
except I went a little far.
Oh, no.
And I was like, okay, a bee. But what kind of bee? What kind of bumblebee? And then I thought about Barry B. Benson from the Bee Movie. Jerry Seinfeld.
God. Yeah.
And I'm just like, this bee sounds so cool. He just graduated from college. He doesn't want to make honey all of his life. And so then he finds a friend, Vanessa, the florist in New York. Oh, and they have a really beautiful relationship. And I was like, that'd be really fun.
Because there's obviously bugs that you wouldn't pick. I mean, you got to think if it's domesticated, it's trainable.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not going to destroy stuff, but I don't think I'd want like a big ant running around my house.
No, and that's the thing. I think it's just because like the PR for bugs is just not great. Like I don't even think a ladybug as like a big domesticated, like sure. Well, it's just have those like pincers and stuff, right?
Like a praying mantis.
Yeah.
Wicked cool, but a little big.
Yeah.
A little scary.
I don't really know.
Tardigrade.
Definitely not.
Yeah, not for you. I would pick either a bee.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Okay, I would pick a bee. Or my second choice would be a caterpillar. Because then I would get, do you remember Heimlich? Do you remember Heimlich from A Bug's Life?
He was so fun.
And then you would get two pets because it would turn into a butterfly.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So you'd have like this caterpillar walking around your house, scrunching on everything. And then you would get a beautiful butterfly.
And then the caterpillar could carry you, or like when it turned into a butterfly, it could carry you places.
It's the size of a domestic cat, not an airliner.
Or take your child to school.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, if we can make them bigger, maybe the size of a horse. Horses are domestic.
Yeah, there you go.
I didn't even think of that. I was thinking domestic. I immediately thought Jimmy. Yeah. So every bug I was thinking was Jimmy's size. But people, I mean, technically, I don't agree with it, people domesticate elephants.
Yeah.
A bug the size of an elephant.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like Great Dane-sized butterfly.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. They're so cute and you could pet them.
Yeah, it'd be cute.
Yeah, so.
I also thought about Turbo the snail from the movie Turbo. And the only reason why I thought this, because I don't really like snails, I just mean they'd be messy.
They'd
be messy. So I don't know if traditional snail would be good, but if you had Turbo the snail, because like, you know how he became fast, right?
Nope.
He was swallowed by a car engine and then and it infused his DNA with nitrous oxide.
That is not where I thought that was going to go at all.
But then you can go really fast and he never leaves a trail. So it would be like a clean snail.
So you'd want Turbo,
And then it would have the voice of Ryan Reynolds. And I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah, who doesn't love Ryan Reynolds?
Who wouldn't
want
that?
Yeah.
So mine would either be Barry B. Benson or Turbo the snail.
Okay, I would pick Barry Tardigrade or a caterpillar. I think I'm good with those choices.
Right.
I wouldn't. Now, if you wanted home defense, though, you could pick a hornet.
No, because they could turn on you.
Yeah, I mean, but so could a dog, but they don't because you love them and you give them what they need.
Oh, no. I'm like, you know what? If there's any chance, actually, I shouldn't say that because like anything can turn on
exactly.
you, let's be honest.
Yeah, like a little hamster can bite you.
Yep.
So, you know, if you have it, like a hornet or a wasp.
Yeah.
Maybe, but yeah, no, I think I'm going to stick with my answers. I like them.
Well, that wraps up this week. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure to give us your perspective on our polls and questions below the episode. You can also leave us an anonymous voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. And you can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. You can also send us an email, info@goldenacre.ca, and then just put podcast somewhere in the subject line so that we see it. We also want to give a huge shout out this week to FeedSpot. Because yes. they featured us number one podcast for beginner gardeners out of North America. It's fantastic. And honestly, yeah. we wouldn't be here without you listening. So a huge thank you to you, you know, participating every week.
I'm so glad we're resonating with people. I'm so glad that we're helping people. We've got some fantastic personal messages. There's more to come. We owe it all to everybody who's listening, downloading, subscribing. I think people can tell that we absolutely love what we do.
We do. And we can't wait to do it all again next weekend.
Exactly.
So we'll catch you then.
Okay. Bye, everyone.